This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on December 14, 2006. Should you have questions after listening to this recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Federal Election Commission open meeting for Thursday, December 14th, 2006 will come to order. Our first item of business this morning, correction and approval of the minutes. Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to move for the consideration and approval of the minutes for November 30th, 2006, as set forth in Agenda Document 06-80.
Vice Chairman, so moved. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries by a vote of 6-0. Before we turn to our substantive agenda today, which is rather lengthy, I just wanted to have a few couple brief comments. This is my last meeting as chairman of the commission, and I want to indicate how much of an honor it's been to be chairman this year. Obviously, it was a very active year at the FEC on a lot of different levels, whether you're talking on the rulemaking level, the policy statement level, the enforcement level, virtually every level. And it's been a real privilege to serve this year. And I want to thank all of my colleagues for their tremendous efforts this year. We had three new commissioners who came on in 2006 during a year that I think was one of the most demanding in the history of the agency, and all of them served with great distinction and were a total pleasure to work with. And I want to thank them personally for that. It made a big difference in our work, and it meant a lot to me. I also want to thank all of our professional staff who worked so hard this year. And if I try to start naming names, I'll forget really key people. But this agency, I think, over the last few years has worked very hard. And the results, I think, speak for themselves in terms of what we've accomplished. And you can't accomplish anything in an agency like this without the terrific work of our professional staff. Commissioners can't do that. And people at the top can't do that. It's only possible when people throughout the organization are working in that fashion. And in so many levels, I think we've had significant advancements. And I want to personally thank everybody in this room and also everybody in the organization for their work this year. I also want to especially thank my staff for all of their efforts this year and in prior years. I want to thank Anton Reel. Nobody knows more about the Federal Election Commission than Anton Reel. Certainly, I never will. I also want to thank Melissa Lorenza, who did tremendous work on the regulations over many years, but especially this year as we were finishing implementing the Shays decision. I also want to thank Stephanie Woolson, who worked in many different areas, often with very little notice, and did the things that have to be done to make it happen. And that is not an easy role to play, and I want to personally thank Stephanie for that. But overall, I think the agency is in very good hands. I think next year is going to be equally productive, and I just wanted to thank everybody for their efforts this year, and it's been a real privilege to serve in 2006 as chairman. And, Mr. Vice Chairman, I understand you have a few remarks.
I do. I just wanted to take a few moments to acknowledge what I think was really the extraordinary work you have done this year. This was, to my mind, I think a very difficult year for this agency. We handled and tackled an enormous number of very, very difficult problems. We began the year with the rulemakings that arose out of originally out of the passage of BCRA and then out of the litigation that followed the Shays litigation. And we began with five, I think, enormously difficult issues. And to my mind, I think some of the hardest issues were left for last in the Shays rulemaking. We addressed the question of who was an agent, when citizens became agents of campaigns and as a consequence became subject to our rules and regulations and where those lines were, what conduct had to occur for people to become agents. We wrestled with the issues of coordination, when outside organizations that were operating independently of campaigns had sufficient contacts with those campaigns to become at that point no longer independent and subject to our regulations. We drafted a set of regulations dealing with what constituted federal election activities, the scope and range by which state parties and local parties could operate for the purpose of state elections and when their conduct was deemed to influence federal election as a federal elections and as a consequence fall within our regulatory regime. We deal with rules that dealt with solicitation and direction, which dealt with the very difficult questions of incumbent office holder and candidate speech and when they made statements that crossed the line into solicitations or the direction of contributions and as a consequence fell within our regulatory regime. And lastly, and I think in many ways, most importantly, we dealt with the Internet and the way that our regulatory regime covered that very new form of technology and the kinds of speech that occurred on the Internet. And I think that in all of these areas, your leadership was enormously important in our ability to reach decisions and our ability to reach consensus on what those rules should be. And most especially in the area of the Internet, the output, the outcome, the results that we reached, I think turned largely on your leadership, your direction. I think that you had a vision of what that how the regulatory regime should interact with that kind of technology, and that that vision guided this agency more than anything else in the outcome and the results that we reached in that area. In the area of enforcement, we also had an enormously busy, productive, and I think in many cases difficult year in wrestling our way through a lot of problems. We had the largest number of penalties, the largest volume of penalties in the history of the agency this year. As one, there are many markers for that, one of which is that we had, I think, at this point, at least 11 cases in which the penalties exceeded $100,000. In the first 25 years of the agency, there were only 17 cases that rose to that level. So in this year alone, we came close to meeting the volume of large cases that the agency handled in its first 25 years of its existence. At the same time, the time at which it took to process cases has fallen dramatically. At this point, we are processing cases in 2006 in a third less time than we did in FY02. And at this point, 80% of our cases that are filed within 6 months of the 04 cycle have been closed at this point. Actually, that percentage may have gone up slightly with yesterday's work. But again, these are both, we're dealing with a lot of volume, we're dealing with a lot of dollars, we're dealing with some very complex and difficult issues. And there are additionally some cases that people around this table are aware of that we've moved largely close to completion but are not quite done that also involved similar very difficult issues. In the advisory opinion area, we've done about 33 or 34 cases, which is about average for a midterm election year. But again, some very difficult questions. How are recounts funded? How is the millionaires' provisions of BICRA implemented? How do we deal with sort of nascent political parties, the intersections of new kinds of techniques in fundraising and existing regulations? All raised, I think, difficult, complex questions, which we were able to reach some sort of resolve on. At the same time, we've also gone through a whole range of sort of changes to the processes of the way this agency does its work this year. And I think that you have helped focus us and guided us in thinking very, very hard about how we do our work and try to ensure that the taxpayers are getting value for the dollars that they put into this agency. We don't have a lot of resources as federal agencies go, and we have a very large volume of transactions that we are to regulate. And as a consequence, I think you've provided great leadership in helping us to think creatively about whether we are, you know, using our resources to the best advantages. And we've implemented a number of different changes. We've created an accelerated advisory opinion process for election-sensitive kinds of questions to try and ensure that that our process does not prevent us providing clear guidance to people who need that in an election cycle. We've increased the use of the Internet in a whole range of areas. We're podcasting these. We've added RSS technology. We've added sort of treasurer's tips and other kinds of communication devices to try and increase the amount of information that flows out of this building to maximize the ability of people people to use both the resources we have and to gain guidance as to what the law is. And later today, we're going to unveil, I think, the advisory opinion search engine that, again, was largely a product of your initiative. That was an area where we were lagging, and I think that your vision and your persistence and your energy and your ability to organize us in a productive way has led to the implementation of a vast number of real improvements in how we do our work. All of those accomplishments are obviously the work product of a lot of people, their staff throughout this building, that have all contributed enormously to making all of that possible. But the truth of the matter is that we could not have accomplished as much and have been as successful in reaching resolutions in these areas if it had not been for your leadership. You have been able to keep us working together through a lot of hard questions. There have been points where we have had profound disagreements among ourselves as to what the correct action was, and yet your management style, your ability to work with us, to use the processes here to keep us talking, to keep us thinking hard, and to try and reach consensus in a timely fashion, I think is largely a product, or is largely been the reason why we have had as much success and has achieved as much as we have this year. And I just wanted to acknowledge that and thank you very, very much for your hard work.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. You're very kind, and I really appreciate your remarks. And you have been a partner this year in every sense of the word, on every level. And it's been a great honor to serve with you, and look forward to serving with you next year when you will be leading the agency, and I know we'll do an outstanding job in that effort. But thank you very much. It was very kind of you. Well, a very festive day because the December meeting, we have our annual Merit and Service Awards, and we have a number of terrific commission employees who have served with great distinction that we wish to recognize this morning. Our staff director, Petrina Clark, is going to help recognize these folks along, I think, with our general counsel, Larry Norton. I think we're going to begin with a couple of people who have served for 10 years at the FEC. And before I introduce them, I just want to emphasize that commissioners come and go. Senior staff here come and go, but the real lifeblood of this agency are the professional staff who serve with great distinction for many years, and we're doing just recognizing a small number of people today of that group of people, and I think I speak for all of my colleagues in thanking all of these people for the work that they've done. So I think we'll begin with the individuals who are marking their 10th anniversary of distinguished service to the Federal Election Commission. First, Andrea Needles. And George Smaragdis. Congratulations. Congratulations, George. And now, individuals who are marking the 20th year of distinguished service. First, Andrew Dotson, 20 years. And Victor Miranda. Is Victor here? Well, we honor him nevertheless. Willie Walls, 20 years of service. Oh, okay. Well, great. We honor Dora as well. Dorothy Yeager. Is Dorothy here from the Information Division?
You've been here 20 years. You get the day off.
You get the day off. All right. It's the least we could do. Well, why don't we turn to our 30-year veterans then? Our first one could not be here today. Irene Allen is marking 30 years of distinguished service. John Gibson, also 30 years of outstanding service to the Federal Election Commission. Congratulations, John. And our Inspector General, Lynn McFarlane, who's marking 30 years of distinguished service. Congratulations. Congratulations, Lynn. And James Queen, 30 years of service today. Congratulations. Congratulations. And Reginald Scott, 30 years of outstanding service at the Federal Election Commission. Let those photo ops be completed. That's important. Got to get those photo ops done. I want to thank all of the staff that we're recognizing today for their outstanding work, as well as everyone else who has helped make the agency's achievements possible. And hope everybody has a terrific holiday season, as this is our last meeting, although work will continue, I'm sure, until January. But I want to thank everybody for their outstanding efforts today. So why don't we turn then to our next item of business, which is the election of officers. And our first... Have we done the minutes? Yeah, we did the minutes. And you voted for it. Election of officers. Our first election this morning is for the officer of chairman of the Federal Election Commission. And are there nominations for chairman? Commissioner Von Spakovsky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to nominate Vice Chairman Robert Lenhart to be chairman next year. In doing so, I want to echo all the comments he made about your chairmanship this year, and that we are going to miss you. But as he said, this was probably a record year for this agency, and it's amazing. We have 30-year veterans, which means that they were here when the doors opened at this agency. But there was no honeymoon for the new commissioners when we came in. We were working on regulations from the first day. And the reason we were able to do that and the reason we were able to really in a very cooperative manner get all of this work done was because of your leadership, and we very much appreciate that. And I do want to say, in nominating Commissioner Lenhart, that I look forward to his chairmanship, that while we sometimes have very spirited debates here about policy and interpretation of the statute, the one thing I have very much enjoyed in this year on the commission is the fact that there's a very collegial atmosphere here. We are able to go to each other's offices and talk about these issues and try to convince each other that their particular viewpoint is correct, and that is one of the reasons we are able to function as we do and why we had a record year this past year, particularly closing. In addition to everything that the Vice Chairman added, we closed, I think, between our administrative fines program, our ADR program, and our MER program, over 300 cases. That is a lot for an agency which is one of the smallest federal agencies in the federal government. And I think that's a remarkable success, one attributable to our professional staff and to the leadership on the commission. But I'm very happy to be able to nominate Commissioner Lenhart for chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner Von Spakovsky. Commissioner Lenhart has been nominated to be chairman of the Federal Election Commission for 2007. Is there discussion on the nomination? Hearing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Congratulations, Commissioner Lenhart, our new chairman in 2007.
Thank you, sir.
I noticed you didn't let anybody get any other nominations in.
I was utterly confident that would not occur. It's always great when we act unanimously here. It's just terrific. Congratulations, Commissioner. You will do an outstanding job. Thanks, Jack.
Thank you. I just wanted to say very briefly, I look forward to this year very much. I think I've got a great base to work from in our work in 2006, and I look forward to the challenge of continuing our record of success this year. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next election will be the officer of vice chairman of the Federal Election Commission. Do we have nominations for that office? Commissioner Walther.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to begin also, like Commissioner Von Spakovsky, because it provides me with an opportunity to say, as a new person to the commission, how much it's meant to me to have your leadership this year. Stepping into government service and here at the same time, I wasn't sure what to expect, and I found from every commissioner utmost in collegiality. But it takes a chairman to always set the tone, and it's been a wonderful, productive, educational year, and I'm very proud of having the opportunity to have served with you. I know all of us feel the same way, but I just wanted to take this moment because you'll be leaving us so soon. It's my privilege to nominate Commissioner David Mason to the position of Vice Chairman of the Federal Election Commission. As we all know, the career of Commissioner Mason is filled with extraordinary accomplishments and dedication to public service, to working in several capacities with our highest leaders in government, to his service as Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense, to his ultimate appointment to the FEC. He's earned a reputation of distinction for hard work, honesty, and congeniality that has given him as fine a reputation as anyone could ask for, both as a person and as a public servant. It will be our honor as commissioners, as well as an honor for the public in general, for Commissioner Mason to serve the FEC once again as vice chairman and as chairman. With the leadership next year of Vice Chairman Lenhardt as our new chairman, and following in the very large footsteps of our current chairman, Chairman Toner, the FEC will undoubtedly experience a new level of accomplishment of its own. Since my short tenure here, Commissioner's reputation has been borne out in every respect. We look to Commissioner Mason to provide a balanced, insightful, direct view on issues with a willingness to hear both sides of the debate with a true interest in order to find a consensus and to provide the very best answer to very difficult issues. He approaches these issues with collegiality and with humor, both of which are critical catalysts for consensus building. As a father of 10, he certainly has gained an added measure of experience which none of us on the commission can claim in juggling competing interests and heartfelt views of persons who need to be treated equally. While his position in assisting Chairman Lenhardt will be much akin to herding cats, as the adage goes, he will have the added factor of difficulty of herding those who have an added measure in different quantities of elephant and mule in their blood. I know that we are compliment all of us as commissioners that he will be herding us in the right direction. For those reasons and many others, I am proud to put Commissioner Mason's name in nomination for the Vice Chairman of the Commission.
Thank you, Commissioner Walther. I'm sure herding us would be far easier. Maybe it's more difficult than your many wonderful children, Commissioner Mason. Are there additional nominations for the officer of Vice Chairman? Hearing none, I will call the question. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? The motion carries 6-0, and Commissioner Mason's elected Vice Chairman. Congratulations, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I first want to thank Commissioner Walther for those very kind, indeed too kind, words and nomination, and to join all of my colleagues in their thanks to you for your service and their great appreciation for it. I very much look forward to working with Chairman Lenhardt next year, and hope indeed we can go on to even better performance next year.
Thank you, Commissioner. I know you will be an outstanding Vice Chairman. You've served with tremendous distinction here at this agency, and your chairmanship year of 2002 was one of the more extraordinary years in the history of the FEC, and it's been a great privilege to serve with you over the last 5 years. Well, now we actually have to do some work on the substantive side, but congratulations to the new officers, and look forward to serving with them in January. Our fourth item of business this morning is future meeting dates. We have an agenda document 06-82 before us, setting out the meeting dates for the first quarter of 2007. Do we have a motion regarding this document? Vice Chairman Lenhardt.
I will be happy to move for the adoption of Agenda Document 06-82. It sets forth meeting dates for both executive sessions and open sessions in the first 3 months of 2007.
Vice Chairman has moved adoption of Agenda Document Number 06-82, setting forth the Commission's schedule for the first quarter of 2007. Discussion of the Vice Chairman's motion. Hearing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries by a vote of all six commissioners present. Our fifth item of business this morning, Draft Advisory Opinion 2006-33, which is sought by the National Association of Realtors and Realtors Political Action Committee and their counsel, Jan Barron. We have two agenda documents. One is Agenda Document 06-81, and the second one, Agenda Document 06-81-A, which was submitted late. Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to move for the suspension of the rules for the consideration of Agenda Document 06-81A.
Vice Chairman is so moved. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries by a vote of all six commissioners present. Mr. Cotwin, good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The draft advisory opinion before you responds to request on behalf of the National Association of Realtors, an incorporated trade association serving members in the real estate industry, and the Realtors Political Action Committee, its separate segregated fund. The request asks first whether the association's payment of corporate treasury funds to its state affiliates in amounts approximately equal to the amounts of increased contributions provided by the state affiliates to the association's PAC would be permissible as an establishment, administration, and solicitation cost. And second, whether the payments by the association would be subject to the one-third rule in the Commission's regulations. The draft concludes, first, that the association's payment of corporate treasury funds to its state affiliates is not permissible as an establishment, administration, and solicitation cost because it would be a prohibited exchange of corporate treasury funds for voluntary contributions, and second, that the payments would not be covered by the one-third rule because they would not be for a raffle or other fundraising device which involves a prize or for an entertainment used as a fundraising device. We received three comments on the draft, and I would be happy to address any questions on the draft or on the comments that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Cotwin. And we had a second agenda document authored by Commissioner Von Spakovsky. Commissioner.
Well, I said before, we often have spirited debate here, and I'm assuming we probably will on this, too. I have proposed an alternative draft that concludes that what the requester wants to do, it can do legally within the statute and the regulations. I think the problem with the OGC draft is that its conclusions are inherently contradictory in that it tries to extend our regulations to cover a situation that they don't really fit. I mean, first of all, the OGC draft analyzes the question in terms of the establishment, administration, and solicitation costs clause in our regulation, which I don't think is applicable here. A second, it then concludes that the incentive payments that NAR is proposing would be a one-for-one trade of treasury funds, and that this fits the trading money situation of our regulations. Again, I don't think that really is applicable to the situation. The draft that I have proposed attempts to examine each element of the requester's proposal to determine if the regulations actually prohibit the conduct at issue. And I believe that if our regulations don't actually prohibit behavior, then the activity is legal. First, the National Association of Realtors wants to transfer funds from its corporate treasury to its affiliated state associations. That's a simple transfer of non-federal funds, and by itself, it doesn't even implicate FECA or our regulations. There's no reason to analyze this transaction in terms of the establishment, administration, solicitation cost provision, which is found at 114.1b, because that has to do with costs in connection with a segregated fund, and that is not what is going on here. Where the commission has considered this exemption in the past and previous AOs, it's always involved a corporation or other sponsoring organization's payment of expenses that otherwise would have to be paid by that corporation's SSF. Again, that's not the situation here. The second transaction that NAR is proposing is a proposed percentage increase in the funds received by RPAC, which is their separate PAC, through its joint fundraising efforts with the state association. We don't have a regulation that regulates the percentage split of joint fundraising agreements, certainly not for this kind of a trade association. Finally, the alternative draft that I've proposed considers what happens when you couple these two transactions. That's the 114.5b money trading issue. Again, I don't think that regulation fits the situation we have here. I don't think there's an exchange of Treasury monies for voluntary contributions. And what's being proposed is not described in our regulations as being prohibited. I don't think we can do what I believe the OGC draft does, which is say, well, these regulations are close enough to what's being proposed, and so NAR can't do this when actually what they're proposing to do is perfectly permissible under the regulations. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner Von Spakovsky. Discussion of the issues before us. Commissioner Mason.
I just wanted to note I had asked Requesters Council, upon reflection, I agree with Commissioner Von Spakovsky that this simply doesn't fit as an establishment administration and solicitation cost. And if it doesn't fit there, then the 114.5 rule doesn't apply either. That would really be a subsidiary conclusion. But I had asked Requesters Council if there were some other reason, non-FECA reason or non-FECA issue having to do with that treatment, and his brief answer was no, that was not their motivation, that there might be some tax details, which he didn't immediately, without having pretended to render an opinion on it, view as consequential one way or the other. But because I had asked him that question, I wanted to let my colleagues know about that. And he had also pointed out what appears to be a technical error in one of the many drafts flying around, but I assured him that we're unlikely to to adopt something finally without being able to address that. But I on the substance, again, when we first got the request, it looked to me like something that ought to be regulated somehow or other, often as the non-attorney, I sort of start with the premise of, well, what's really going on here? And if we can figure out what's really going on, then we can start working through the legal issues of how that's affected in various ways. And I think it's my observation that lawyers frequently start with, well, where does this fit under the law? And that sometimes leads them to start at a different place, and I think that's why the requester started with this establishment administration solicitation premise, which of course the staff followed. But I think if we scratch at that fundamental premise, we sort of have some difficulty in fitting that in fitting this particular activity under that category. And for that reason, I'm persuaded that Commissioner Von Spakovsky, his approach is correct. In terms of thinking about what it is most akin to me it looks most akin to the sort of hard money, soft money swaps that we've seen among state parties, which, while one of my colleagues pointed out, has gotten some people into trouble apparently under state laws, isn't a problem under FECA. In other words, when state party committees swap hard money for soft money among each other, or in the pre-BICRA days when those transactions were made between the national and state parties, they were well recognized. And while the problem and the reason we have the request is that this doesn't precisely fit absolutely clearly under any set of our regulations, to me, that's what it is most akin to. And in that sense, I don't really think we have any concern, as Commissioner Von Spakovsky points out, about a transfer of funds from one level of trade association to another in two different accounts. And the fact that the amounts match up really doesn't add anything to the analysis.
Thank you, Commissioner Mason. Additional discussion? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Oh, I hate to be the one to break our lovely spirit of unanimity and collegiality this morning.
We were on such a roll.
We were on
40 minutes here.
We were on such a roll. But I hate to cause my friend Mr. Barron to frown out there, but don't worry, Mr. Barron, I think I'm going to lose. So you're going to be okay at the end of the day. I think the staff draft was the better analysis. I think this presents, like many of the questions that we're confronted with here, a technical question as to where in the, you know, where in this book does this transaction belong? I think one can argue that it doesn't quite belong anywhere, but we got to find a place for it somewhere, either in or out. I think that, to me, again, looking at it from Commissioner Mason's question of, you know, what's really going on here, it looks to me like it falls pretty clearly under the regulation that says you can't exchange Treasury funds for contributions. And I think that's how the requester actually understands what they're doing. We can break it out and say, well, it's not an exchange, it's two separate transactions, and pretend it isn't what they asked us and pretty much told us that it is. But I think that the staff draft more closely reflects what's really going on here. And I don't think it's a big deal. I don't think that whatever we do today, one way or the other, is going to have a vast impact or on the law or grossly undermine BCRA or anything else. But, you know, on this small legal issue, I think that the question as posed, as I said, more, you know, looks to me like it falls pretty closely under this regulation. I think that is what's going on here, and I think the staff draft was right. I won't move it because I don't think that there are four votes for it, but I would vote for it if I thought there were four votes for it.
Thank you, Commissioner Weintraub. Additional thoughts? Vice Chairman Lenhart.
I thought there was a great moment there where Commissioner Weintraub created the tension and then broke it too quickly. We thought we could have let Mr.
Barron
on the hooks exactly for at least another 3 or 4 minutes as he tried to guess where the votes were going to go of those who had not yet spoken. But alas, the final act has been revealed. I agree with the conclusion that Commissioner Von Spakovsky and Commissioner Mason reach, but I get there on a different path. And Commissioner Mason is correct. One of the things that I do, and I didn't know it was because of my legal training, but one of the things that I do is try and figure out how does this fit? How does it fit within the statutory and regulatory regime we have before us to implement? And as an important first step is to think clearly, what is this that we're looking at? What does this transaction really entail? As I see it, what the entity that has come before us wants to do is to get their state affiliates out of raising money and to refocus them instead, or at least get them out of raising money for their state PACs and get them instead to raise money for their federal PACs. And they are willing to pay the cost of getting to do that. And they are not only willing to pay the future direct costs of having that money raised for their PAC, but they're also willing to provide an incentive payment to their state affiliates to get them to raise this money for them. And as a consequence, it seems to me that the payments that the national entity will be making are therefore incurred in pursuit of voluntary contributions, which is sort of a turn of phrase that this agency has used for several decades, actually since 1977, in trying to discern whether a disbursement by an entity is a solicitation cost or is a cost of soliciting funds for its separate segregated fund. And so it does strike me that these payments do in fact seem to be solicitation costs. There are the two things that cause me some pause in my thinking about this, and the first is that they're not just paying the direct costs, which is a reasonably traditional means by which entities subsidize their political, their PACs, their separate segregated funds. And so they're not just paying the cost of staff, whatever, they're paying an incentive payment. They're paying more than the direct costs, potentially. The conclusion I reached after thinking that through is that this is probably not a practice that would cause us even a moment's pause if it was a relationship with a professional fundraiser. And that, in fact, it's common, I think, especially in the telephone solicitation business, for professional fundraisers to take a rather significant percentage of the funds they raise. And therefore the fact that it isn't direct cost but that there isn't some incentive element to it is not particularly striking in other contexts. And in fact, if in looking at a number of advisory opinions we've issued in the context of corporate entities making contributions to charities on a dollar-for-dollar basis in response to or as an incentive for people to make contributions to the PAC is a practice that we have approved for quite a long period of time. The second part of the transaction that caused me some pause is that not only are they paying or incentivizing their state affiliates to raise this money, but the state affiliates are agreeing not to raise money for themselves as part of this. Yet while that's an additional feature to the transaction, it doesn't strike me as running afoul of our regulatory regime. And so at the end, that does not end up causing me to come out in a different way. The Office of General Counsel has come up with a very different analysis, and I think it's a reasonable one. I choose not to follow it, but I can certainly understand their thinking on this and the elements of this transaction that caused them to draw an analogy between our regulations that prevent or prohibit an exchange of Treasury funds for PAC contributions. And I think that obviously advisory opinion request was submitted by an esteemed and very learned counsel in this area, and obviously he had some concerns that other people might reach a different conclusion than he did as to whether this was a permissible transaction or not. So I think that there's a reasoned analysis on the other side. The reason why I think at core this does not look like an exchange of funds to me is that the exchange is not occurring with the donor. The people that are actually making these contributions to this federal PAC under this program will not receive any incentive payments themselves. They will be left with a choice of whether they think it is within their self-interest and their ideological advantage to make contributions to this federal PAC and as opposed to having historically made one to a state PAC. And that decision is not altered by the fact that the state entity is receiving some sort of compensation or incentive or payments to try and encourage them to make those contributions. The money itself does not flow to the donor, and that is enormously significant because, as I read our earlier decisions prohibiting the exchange of Treasury funds for PAC funds, it is an effort to prevent the subsidizing or the circumvention on the prohibition on corporate contributions to federal PACs by running the money through the donors. And in this particular transaction, the donors themselves will continue to make these contributions out of their personal funds and will receive no monetary benefit or other economic incentive to make those contributions. So at the end of all of that, my conclusion is that Commissioner von Spakovsky has reached the right answer, although I again reached that conclusion for a somewhat different set of reasons.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. I share many of the Vice Chairman's thoughts. I also believe that the proposed transaction is lawful. I concur with Commissioner von Spakovsky's fundamental point that if there's not a clear prohibition in the statute and the regulations on the transaction at issue, that it is permissible. I think that is the appropriate presumption that we should give in general. I share the Vice Chairman's analysis in terms of 114.5B, which is that part of our regulations, which make clear that corporate treasury funds can't be used as a means of exchanging treasury monies for voluntary contributions, and that the fact that no funds will flow in any respect to donors under these proposed transactions is very significant and does not implicate, therefore, 114.5B. I also agree that the proposed transaction has a lot of similarities to the charitable match programs that we've approved over the years, I think over pretty much the last 25 years. But I also agree with the Vice Chairman that this is a very Byzantine part of the law and that the Council's analysis is a very plausible reading of applicable regulations, but I concur that the proposed transaction here before us is permissible, and I understand there's some different points of emphasis about the entire rationale for that, but I do support that ultimate conclusion. Commissioner Walther.
Well, the votes are counted, but I remember that my first vote on the commission, I think, was I said I didn't want to leave Commissioner Weintraub going down in flames, and I do join her on this. I share her analysis and think that Yes, there's less than clarity in our regulations. It doesn't cover it the way we'd like to have a lot of these covered, and that's why we have advisory opinions. We do our best to see how policy and our language can be reconciled. But I think the policy that I see, and even just the language of exchanging treasury monies for voluntary contributions, yes, voluntary, not directly, but perhaps indirectly. I think the donor may be affected by where they ultimately see the money's going to go. I think there's, if, for example, the following paragraph, contributor may not be paid for his or her contribution through bonuses, expense accounts, or other form of direct or indirect compensation. It makes it clear that what we really want is a true sense of voluntariness, and I think when we're talking about matching dollar for dollar, we're talking about something different. So I support the position of the general counsel's blue draft, and willing to be voted in opposition. Once again.
Thank you, Commissioner Walther. It appears we may have a consensus that the activity is lawful. The question is, how do we want to proceed here? One way we could proceed is to vote on a motion to conclude that the underlying activity is lawful. And as I understand, there's two rationales here. One is that it's a bona fide solicitation, administrative cost. And then second of all, in any event, the underlying transactions aren't within the commission's jurisdiction. And it may be that the vice chairman would rest on that, on the first ground rather than the second ground, and I guess we have the ability to do concurring opinions that flesh that out. So one approach might be to see if we develop consensus on the ultimate conclusion, and then perhaps we would ultimately vote that document out on tally, you know, and work internally on that, and then any concurring opinions that are needed could be issued. Commissioner Bonsfikowski, are you seeking recognition?
Well, I'd be happy to do it that way, Mr. Chairman. And if I could ask Mr. Norton, what is our deadline for response on this AM?
Friday. 19th.
It's the 19th. The 19th. Okay. So we do still have a little bit of time. And I believe I understand correctly, is it not? Well, I'm sorry, Commissioner Weintraub.
No, I was just going to say, I bet he'd give you more time because he's going to get the answer he wants.
And I believe, Mr. Chairman, there is precedent, and Mr. Norton, I think, has told me, there is precedent for the fact that we have in the past issued advisory opinions where we've given basically alternative reasons for why something is legal or not legal. So I'd be happy to make a motion that we agree that the action that the requester is proposing is legal under our regulations and law, and then we can work on the exact language for the advisory opinion.
And the requester asked two questions, one dealing with the payment of the Treasury funds, the other dealing with the one-third rule. And as I understand it, unless I'm wrong, there's no debate on the one-third rule. I think everyone's agreeing it's not applicable here. But Commissioner Vasikowski then has offered a motion that the commission conclude that the underlying transactions in issue are lawful, that we will work with counsel to vote on tally a document effectuating that conclusion, setting forth the two primary rationales that have been advanced today. Discussion on Commissioner Bonsfikowski's motion. Hearing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
Nay. Motion carries by a vote 4-2 with Commissioners Weintraub and Walther dissenting. Thank you, Mr. Conlon. Okay, our fifth item of business this morning is a purpose of disbursement policy statement that the Vice Chairman and I and my colleagues and counsel have been working on for the last couple of months, and we have a late submitted document. Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to move for the suspension of the rules for the timely submission of documents to consider agenda document 06-83.
Vice Chairman is so moved. All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries by a vote of all six commissioners present. I'll just have a couple of opening comments on the document before us. You know, this has been an effort in the last couple of months to provide greater guidance on the exact type of entries that can satisfy a political committee's obligation to identify the purpose of disbursements. The regulations have some guidance there, but I think it's long been thought that there a lot more guidance could be helpful in this area. And so a policy statement was issued, a draft policy statement was issued, and we got a couple of comments on it. The document before us today is identical to substantially the same as the proposed policy statement with one substantive difference, and that is adding the term consultant political to the generally unacceptable list of descriptions and adding several descriptions that would be permissible, including consultant media, consultant fundraising, consultant get out the vote, consultant legal, and consultant polling. These changes were recommended by CFI, who was one of the commenters. But I think we recognize this is all a work in progress in terms of the permissible disbursement entries for political committees. But I think that if we approve the statement for us today, it'll be a positive step in providing greater definition in terms of what committees' obligations are. And I think it's equally important to identify the codes, the descriptions that are insufficient, so that council compliance staff for these committees know that that will not be sufficient for them in general, and equally important to identify those that we think generally will be sufficient, so that there's just greater guidance, because my sense is that committees very much wish to comply in this area. It's just difficult sometimes to make judgment calls about how to describe a transaction. So I think that this is a positive step in that direction. So, and I support the document before us. Discussion. Vice Chairman Lenhart.
Yes, just briefly. I think that this is an area where political committees that often run afoul of our internal practices, that there were a range of different descriptions that we as an agency had concluded were not sufficiently clear to justify or to meet our regulations, and but it was unclear to a lot of political committees what those terms were. And as a consequence, people would make mistakes. They would use terms which we did not find sufficiently specific, and then they would be engaged in a process with us of trying to get that amended, their reports amended to correct that. And this is simply a means or a way by which to try and reduce those kinds of inadvertent errors, to try and guide people to using descriptions of their expenditures that are sufficiently specific, and hopefully will reduce the amount of time that we spend correcting those kinds of errors. So I think it is both helpful and constructive, and I support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. Additional discussion. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also strongly support this document. I think there are a few things that are as frustrating for people in the regulated community is the sense that we're kind of playing gotcha with them. We've got a list. We know what's okay and what's not okay, but we're not going to tell you, and you have to guess. And, you know, so they'll write one thing down. We say, no, that's not it. Come back and give us a more specific answer. And I know that's, having been on the outside, I know how frustrating that can be. I've been a long, fervent and adherent of our being more transparent about our internal decision-making processes and in many ways. And I think this is another very positive step in that direction, in making us more transparent and in helping people comply with the law.
Thank you. Additional discussion. Commissioner Bonsakowski.
I don't want to get away without agreeing with Commissioner Weintraub today, but I just want to point out...
I appreciate
out,
that you don't hold a grudge, Commissioner.
I just want to point out, and this is, I think, important for people outside the agency to know, this is what now the fourth policy we've put out in just the last 2 months, which I think, again, is a record for this agency, this past year. And all of the commissioners are united on making our processes more transparent so that people in the regulated community know what the rules are under which we review and look at reports and violations of the law, because we don't want it to be a secret. And this is a good example of that. And I want to compliment the vice chairman and the chairman for having put this together.
Thank you. Additional discussion on the issues before us? Commissioner Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to address the comments because I thought they were helpful, and they did raise an issue and sort of explain why, from my perspective, we were not really able to go nearly as far as the two commenting organizations wanted us to. and in particular to the issue of establishing a kind of exclusive list. And I understand why the analytical organizations love that sort of thing, because they want to be able to break it down into what, how much was spent on television and direct mail and, you know, all these other things. But of course the statute is not very specific. It simply says there needs to be a purpose out there. And I really don't think there's any doubt among those of us here inside the commission that if we wanted to go in the direction of an exclusive and comprehensive list, that would require regulation, that we couldn't put that mandate out on the regulated community. And so what we had were some internal materials that we thought were a good step in the right direction. And we didn't think there was any reason to fail to be more transparent and to give more guidance to the extent that we could, and as it were, not put out this degree of guidance because it wasn't perfect and it wasn't comprehensive. Because I think failing to put out something like this would be, as the saying goes, to make the best the enemy of the good. And I hope the commenters agree that taking this step is a good one. And as will become apparent probably next month, we continue to have a large regulatory agenda here, and whether, you know, additional guidance on the purpose of disbursements is one of the most two or three or four or five most important things for the agency to do, I think is a very much a debatable issue, and we can have that discussion. But we appreciated the comments. We're not simply ignoring them. But to go as far as the commenters suggested, I really do think would take a very different kind of process, and would have left us without what I hope that even the commenters will agree is a positive step to take today.
Thank you, Commissioner Mason. Additional discussion on the proposed policy statement. Do we have a motion? Vice Chairman Linhart.
Thank you. I would like to move for the adoption of Agenda Document 06-83 for its publication, to instruct the staff to arrange for its publication in the Federal Register, and to authorize the Office of General Counsel to make any conforming and technical amendments that are necessary.
Vice Chairman has moved adoption of Agenda Document Number 06-83 concerning a policy statement for purpose of disbursement entries to authorize the staff to have it published in the Federal Register, and I can't recall the last element of your motion.
Authorize the Office of General Counsel to make any conforming and technical amendments.
And authorize our counsel to make any technical and conforming amendments that may be necessary. Thank you. The Vice Chairman is so moved. Discussion on the Vice Chairman's motion. All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries by a vote of all six commissioners present. Thank you. Our final item of business in 2006 is a very exciting demo and discussion of a searchable advisory opinion technology that a great deal of work has gone on over the last several months. Madam Staff Director, your able team has done terrific work on this. Alec Palmer is here, our Deputy Staff Director, and the floor is yours.
Well, welcome. First, I'd like to say that about a year ago, when Chairman Toner brought to our attention the decision of what the commission wanted to do for providing and building a new surgical AO system. Took that vision and developed a team that consisted of members from the staff director's office, office of general counsel, representatives from the chairman's office and the vice chairman's office. And we also partnered and collaborated with NIC Technologies, who are the successful candidate bidding for this job. They have built a prototype for us, and I just want to emphasize the word prototype today. And what we have, what you're going to see, is basically we have pre-populated the search results. I am going through a very concise script to generate the search results, but I think what you're going to see today concept of what is going to go into production on February 1st. So let's go ahead and start with the demo. What you see here basically is the first screen that is going to come up, which is basically the basic search screen. Let me come back to this in a moment, but let me just quickly go to the advanced search screen, because I also want to have you see that basically there's also tremendous power in this tool to be able to narrow your search down. I'm going to come back to this in a few minutes, but I wanted to establish your paradigm that we have two basic search screens, one being the basic and one being the advanced. On the basic search screen that you have here, there are three basic areas that you would search upon. The keyword search, similar to that you do in Google. The other one would be going specifically to the AO number. You may have the AO number in your mind. You don't want to have to navigate through anything. You want to go directly to that AO. You would type in that number there. Or there's a specific request name. You know somebody that has requested it. You could type their name in, and it would bring up all the related AOs that that person is associated with. Down here towards the bottom of the screen, we have a couple of neat features that you can actually browse advisory opinions and related documents by year. So if you click on any one of those years, in this case, if we click on 2005, we have only two in there now, prototype, but it brings up, or would bring up in the production system, all of the AOs for 2005. So that will be the case, so basically you can click on any one of these years and it will bring up the AOs specific to that year. The next item below that is the pending advisory opinion requests. This is quite, I think, a nice new feature where all of the information regarding pending advisory opinions now is going to be on one page. Rather than having to go across many different pages, it will be consolidated here. Well, let's go ahead and, by the way, also there are some nice search boxes here. If you click on the little question mark, it pops up the terms that you may not be familiar with, of how to do searches and how the system works. So we have built-in help on the system as well. But let's go ahead, and I'm going to type in the word test because we have pre-populated that word into the AOs that we have. You can either hit the Enter key or go down to the search box and click on that. So as we execute that, it then returns basically in the Google-style format all of the AOs that returned or had the word test in that advisory opinion. And as you see here, similar to Google, it has, first of all, it has the AO number, the name of the AO, and then a summary of them. So you can actually look at that, view that, and see if this is really where I want to go. It even has information that is tagged in there by the Office of General Counsel, whether it's superseded in part, related to BIC, and things of that nature, which will come in very handy later as you try to use the advanced search to even drill down further. I'm going to I'm free to open up one of these right now because you're going to get a bit too excited and you may not get back to the search, so I'm going to do that in a few minutes. If we go down here, we can go ahead. Now, let me make the statement that I think it's important. These search terms here on this page are exclusive. In other words, if you put in the word test here and request the name down here, it will not work. We wanted the basic search to be very quick. We wanted to narrow down basically search results. We do that in the advanced search page. So I'm going to go ahead and clear this form. If we go ahead now and type in a specific AO number, now, notice what happens. This totally bypasses the whole Google search listing, and it brings up for you the result, because there's no need now to bring up the whole Google page. For the analogy of that is, it brings up basically on the right-hand side, this is called the split screen. And this is, I think, an amazing feature, and some of you may have seen this before in other products that are out there in the legal world. But on the right-hand side is the final AO that you have here. It is in a PDF format. Excuse me. And in this, you can actually search within this PDF. All you have to do is click on this binocular, and then you type in the word that you're looking for, and it will highlight it within that PDF document, so you don't have to read the entire document to find it. Over on the left-hand side is information related to the history of that. In fact, let me show you a better one. Maybe a bit more clarification, and I want to come back to this in a minute. If I go to this Diane Farrell for Congress, now notice this opens up a new window. If you enlarge that, here you have on the left-hand side all the history related to this AO. And don't pay attention to the dates here. That's all today's date. And the production system would be the actual date that that document was produced. And the descriptions in the production system would be more accurate. Comment from so-and-so, etc. So you could actually go to either one of these, click on request, and it would actually bring up the scanned image document that would be presented on the right-hand side that shows you that document. And you can go through all the way, all the historical, all the comments, the draft AOs, all the way down to the final AO. So this is exciting, because all of a sudden, in one page, one screen, you have the final AO on one side. On the left-hand side, you can continue to search and continue to tie information together related to that AO. The other thing that's also exciting is this summary information is very helpful. And down at the bottom is information on the entities and the different roles. I want to talk about this area here in a minute, but I just need to go to another AO to do that, because as I mentioned, this is kind of a prototype, and I have to make sure I go to the right one so it shows up. Let's go back to 2006, AO number one. Let's go ahead and open that. Now, if I go ahead and click on this, this is basically, we talked about before, and I think Commissioner Weintraub asked the question a few weeks ago about shepherdizing, the process of how you link AOs together. Well, if I click on this, this will open up a search page, again, in the same style that you would see in Google, that would list every AO that references AO 2006-01. So all of a sudden, a tremendous research tool to be able to make sure that you have the right information. The other thing that we don't have on this prototype right now that will be added is when the Office of General Counsel adds specific information and tags and attributes, they will have listed here the AO that superseded this one. So you will be able to get to that and find out. You don't have to search all over the place to find out which one it references. So that'll be referenced in the AO summary. And let's go back to the bottom of the screen and remember the Diane Farrell. Let's see if we can find that particular AO. We click on that, it brings up the only one we have for Diane Farrell. We click on that, it opens up that particular AO. So that's the basic search screen that we have. Let's take a moment. Let's go ahead and go to our advanced search. You can go to Advanced Search from many different places. The previous screen I was at, you can click on Advanced Search, go from there, or you can go from the home page. Let me go ahead and clear the form, click on Advanced Search. And Advanced Search is basically the ability to narrow your search down. So, for example, if you entered, again, back to test, and if you clicked on the final opinion, now it's important to notice that these categories here, one category has to be selected in the advanced search option. You can select all of them if you want to really narrow it down. But if you're looking for a specific keyword in all final opinions, so you click on that box, you simply search on it, and then it brings up the results. And this time, we have narrowed the search down where we only get 6 AOs instead of the 10 that we had in the basic search. You can even narrow it down more that if we wanted to look for, I think it was Diane Farrell, under Entity, we click on Search for that, and then it just basically brings up the one AO for related to Diane Farrell. Some other key things that I'm not showing today that we're not really quite ready yet is the opportunity for Boolean search and or not. We're 90% sure that by the date we go into production that we'll have the feature of the Boolean capability where you can find one word within so many words of another word. For example, you want to find the word building within 5 words of brick to find this building is made of a brick. You can do that with that capability. Wild cards with the asterisks. Basically, if you type in the letter H and then asterisk S, you'll find every word that has S after H. The question mark, we're not sure if that's going to work yet. The question mark is basically one character where H question mark S, so it would return like his and has. It's a single character. So in the question mark, it's still a question, whether we'll have that ready or not. Some of the other, things that are really nice about this is the new architecture from a technology standpoint that has been developed. It's very robust. And I think with the tools that we had and the budget limitations that we had, that team that was involved in this, I think, did an excellent job. Tremendous collaborative effort across the commission to be able to put requirements together, a good partnership with the contractor, and we really feel that we're going to have a good product for the commission come the end of February. And I think it's important to note that two individuals, the two co-tars on this project, Jennifer Boyd from IT and Richard Buell from Office of General Counsel, I think deserve a lot of credit for guiding this process forward and working with the team of everyone to make this happen. Questions?
Questions for Alan? I want to thank everybody who's working this process. Council's office, is refining this process. We have substantive information about the AOs, whole or part. Basically, now we're developing a search engine very similar to what we do online in Lexus, Texas, jeopardizing Westlaw, IT team all the time, efforts put together on contractors. I think this is the agency at its best, working collaboratively across the region line, put out a product for the public like we've never put out before. And I really want to thank everybody who's worked on this site in February, late February when it goes live. And it'll be a work in progress, but I'm confident that people on the outside and on the inside who are having to do research in this area, it'll be a real benefit. Thank you so much. I want to thank everybody involved in the process. I think it really means every division versus every division. And are there any questions for Alex on the demo? Okay, well, great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. meet like this regularly. This quiet, light, you know?
Bring the popcorn.
That's right.
We're going to like this. I'm going to read in front of our fish.
That's right. This could be good.
They have hearings like that on Capitol Hill.
Yeah.
That's right, IRS hearings.
I don't know if that fits in with our transparency.
See, maybe for our executive
Thank you. We were just remarking how what a calming influence this soft light has. And maybe, Mr. Chairman, to be this, maybe this is a model for what we do in January. Madam Staff Director, additional matters to bring to our attention this morning?
There are none, Mr. Chairman.
Well, hearing none, that brings this meeting to an end, and the FEC will be enjoying the holidays and continuing to work in the days ahead, but enjoying the holidays, and we will reconvene in 2007. So with that, this meeting is adjourned.